Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today is December 29th. It's Friday, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And we're going to try to review, or at least begin, the year in review. So some of the issues that have come about, of course, is AI, which is artificial intelligence, RIZZ, spelled R-I-Z-Z, Kubelt, C-O-U-P, then B-E-L-T, and other top terms of 2023. So in political speeches, United Nations resolutions, social media posts, or everyday speak, they were the terms of 2023 that everyone used or should have used. And some were brand new, others old new, but they all had a particular resonance this year. The news year began with an old new, as seasoned Brazilian statesman Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva was sworn into office on January 1 of 2023 for his third presidential term. Older, grayer, but still fighting, Lula was back. Novelty had lost sheen after a single Jair Bolsonaro term. The familiar brought comfort at the dawn of a new year. But by the end of the year, a familiar issue reemerged, and it was not comforting. October 7 Hamas attack put the Israeli-Palestinian issue back on the spotlight, and with it came some old terms applied with renewed urgency. So let's look at some of the terms that dominated the global discourse in 2023. There's AI. Well, the race began at the end of 2022 when open artificial intelligence, OpenAI, suddenly released its ChatGPT, a mass market gateway to generative artificial intelligence. But it was in 2023 that the power of artificial intelligence was fully unleashed, with millions using it for a variety of functions as other tech giants such as Google and Meta raced to release their own artificial intelligence products. As competition advanced, artificial intelligence even faster, ever faster. Public debates struggled to keep up. U.S. President Joe Biden issued an executive order on artificial intelligence safety standards in October. And barely 2 months later, European Union member states reached a landmark artificial intelligence regulation deal after intense negotiations. And the deal still needs to be formally approved and applied by member states. It also has its critics, including governments and tech lobbying firms who worry Europe could lose out on the artificial intelligence market. Competition kickstarted the artificial intelligence race. In 2023, the prompt, quote unquote, the human language that can be understood by artificial intelligence platforms hurdled it alone. Well, Merriam-Webster's 2023 Word of the Year was chosen for the number of times the word was looked up according to the U.S. dictionary publishers. The high volume lookup of the word authentic was not just because it was used so often, but also because authentic was a number of has a number of meanings and is subject to debate. In an artificial intelligence age, the real, quote-unquote, or genuine, quote-unquote, became a fundamental counterpoint. Authentic, quote-unquote, is also associated with identity, which made it even more popular in a social media-driven world of self-expression, championed by celebrities. So when Taylor Swift declared she was seeking her authentic self, quote-unquote, it wasn't long before millions got swept up in her quest for fulfillment. And then we have the coup belt. Coup d'etats turned to the Sahel, and with it, the decline of French influence. In its former African pré carré, or backyard, which saw Russia offer itself as a security partner of choice to Putin's. Well, the Russian promise in the guise of Wagner or Wagner 2.0 substitutes is unlikely to deliver security and stability to a chronically impoverished, insecure, poorly administered part of the world. If the people in Sahel found themselves trapped between a rock and a hard place, France was not able to win the day. French troop pullouts were largely welcomed in countries that never recovered from the brutality of colonialism or the post-colonial France-Afrique era of patronage networks. France's slow boil of humiliation proved good for Russia, and France's loss in the coup belt spelt Russia's gain. Then we have dollarization and de-dollarization. Both terms, antonyms, created a splash in 2023, reflecting opposing imperatives. De-dollarization is an almost a decade-old trend, reflecting growing dissatisfaction over the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. The announcement this year of an additional six countries to the BRICS affiliation gave de-dollarization a boost. The BRICS group attempts to replace the U.S. dollar with the R5, a reference to the five currencies used by the founding BRICS members, the Brazilian real, Russian ruble, Indian rupee, Chinese renminbi, and South African rand. The addition of Saudi Arabia, Iran, Ethiopia, Egypt, Argentina, and the United Arab Emirates to BRICS meant the de-dollarization attempt looks set to continue. But the old dollarization, quote-unquote, also made a brief splash this year when populist Argentinian president candidate Javier Milei promised to replace the battered peso with a greenback on the campaign trail of fake $100 bill featuring the wild-haired libertarian instead of a balding Benjamin Franklin became a familiar sight. Milei won the election, but economists dismissed his self-styled anarcho-capitalist promise, which put the old de-dollarization back on the ascendant. Well, then we have a humanitarian pause, not a ceasefire. One of the world's most bitter semantic debates had thousands of lives at stake. As Israel launched retaliatory strikes on Gaza after the October 7 Hamas attack, the international community displayed unanimity in public calls for the protection of civilian life, then split on how to achieve it. As Gazans perished in the thousands, a war of words raged at the United Nations Security Council, heeding the call of aid organizations and United Nations bodies, such as the World Health Organization. Most countries in the 15-member body called for an immediate ceasefire. But the term was a red line for the United States, Israel's primary backer and a veto-wielding permanent Security Council member. Pro-Israel U.S. allies such as the United Kingdom and Germany this year followed the Biden administration's position that a, quote, ceasefire, end quote, implied a longer period, which could give Hamas the time to regroup. Quote, humanitarian pause, end quote, then became the acceptable way to demand a halt to the fighting to enable a limited amount of aid to enter the blockaded Palestinian enclave. Both terms lack legal definition, making the language of bickering a political row while Palestinians were killed and the fate of the Israeli hostages kidnapped on October 7 took a back seat to their country's war aims. Then we have fossil. Paleontologists this year uncovered several groundbreaking fossils, from the world's second largest spider in Australia to a 41-million-year-old miniature whale in Egypt. But they were not the fossils on the table at the COP28 in Dubai, the commercial heart of the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, one of the world's largest oil producers and home to seven so-called carbon bombs, quote-unquote, the world's largest fossil fuel production projects. In the end, the climate conference did manage to produce a compromise final deal. As with all compromises, the deal was spun differently by different stakeholders. Participants agreed to, quote, a loss and damage fund, end quote, to support developing countries vulnerable to climate change. China and India, the world's biggest current emitters, agreed to participate, but the fund, initially managed by the World Bank, is on a voluntary basis, because the devil lies in the delivery. Well, on the fossil fuel front, or question, COP28 wound up with a pledge to, quote, transition away, end quote, from fossil fuels. There was no mention of, quote, phasing out, end quote, in the final text. It was a tiny step towards leaving fossil fuels buried in the ground to prevent climate change. Then we had the issues with regarding to the Global South. The Global South has replaced the Third World, less developed countries, LDCs, and developing countries as the term of choice, despite geographic inconsistencies. Nations such as Australia and New Zealand in the global north, while the majority of global south countries are in the northern hemisphere. The year began with the West chastising the global south for its neutrality on the first anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. The global south's failure to punish Russia for its breaches of international law and human rights abuses was viewed as an example of self-interest, paralyzing the post-war multilateral rules-based order. Well, the Global South, for its part, accused the West of double standards, quote-unquote, by the end of the year. As the Gaza humanitarian situation continued to deteriorate, the Global South led the charge against Israel's breaches of international law and human rights abuses, but cut out from the power center of permanent United Nations Security Council membership. The Global South position was blocked by the pro-Israel, U.S.-led West. Well, the double standards, quote-unquote, accusations, in the end, won the day and the year. 49.3. Well, French President Emmanuel Macron's move to increase the minimum retirement age from 62 to 64 sparked a protest movement that dominated the discourse in France in 2023. As opponents of the pension reform staged strikes and protests across French cities and towns, the government rammed the reform through Parliament. Enter 49.3, the street of reviation for the controversial Article 49.3 of the French Constitution, which grants the government executive privilege to pass a bill without a vote. 49.3 became the catchphrase for many of the challenges confronting French democracy and the failure this year of the French quest to work less. Then we have the term RIZZ, R-I-Z-Z. Being swifty, quote-unquote, situationship, quote-unquote, and de-influencing, quote-unquote, RIZZ, R-I-Z-Z, quote-unquote, claimed Oxford English Dictionary's 2023 Word of the Year. For those who never heard the word before, it was a sign they weren't keeping up with the times. RIZZ is a colloquial word defined as style, charm, or attractiveness, the ability to attract a romantic or sexual partner, quote-unquote, according to the Oxford University Press. The term is thought to be a shortened form of the word charisma. It can also be used as a verb. So, to rizz up means to attract, seduce, or chat someone up. For a generation of youth emerging from the isolation of the COVID pandemic, the rizz, rise up, and slang ranks marked a return to the world of socializing, face-to-face dating, and the social grading of the real world that we all missed. Then we have Twitter died in 2023. Well, not quite. The social media transformed, some would say transmogrified, into X. It was a symbolic statement of the takeover of Elon Musk's of things once relegated to state control, from policing, or the lack of policing, speech to space, which enabled the whimsical South African-born magnate to dictate whether civilians in war zones from Ukraine to Gaza had internet connectivity. Well, the old Twitter lost its famous blue bird. The old new Twitter sported a terrifying black X instead. The first fallout, X lost more than 4-5% of his daily active users in August and September. Add to this the massive presence of fake news, shadow banning, and the loss of brand value in advertisers, notably IBM and the European Commission, and it made for a rather chaotic year for X. Let's look at some other things which you may find of importance. El Loco at the helm for Argentina under outsider President Javier Milei. A former TV personality turned political maverick, Argentina's president-elect Javier Milei has promised no half measures as he bids to make his stricken country great again, quote-unquote. Riding a wave of anti-establishment rage, the far-right outsider known for his foul-mouthed outbursts will have no time to bask in his stunning victory as he inherits an economy mired in crisis with no experience and few allies to implement his radical agenda for change. For years, Argentina's discredited ruling class has been sitting on a powder keg, unable to lift the country out of a seemingly intractable crisis that has sowed anger and despair in South America's second largest economy. On Sunday, long simmering anger boiled over, carrying to power a chainsaw-wielding political outsider who has promised to, quote, blow up, end quote, the system, and whose own supporters call him El Loco, which translates to English as the madman. Milei, a former economist and TV pundit with almost no political experience, has surged to power on a wave of anger over decades of economic mismanagement. He's vowed to, quote, put an end to the parasitic, stupid, useless political caste that is sinking, end quote, a country crippled by triple-digit inflation where the poverty rate has reached 40%. Self-styled anarcho-capitalist, quote-unquote, handily defeated his Peronist opponent, Finance Minister Sergio Massa, in a runoff election on Sunday, defying forecasts of a close race in a contest analysts had described as a tussle between two deeply flawed candidates. Quote, Argentinians were forced to choose between two very unappealing options, end quote, said Benjamin Guedan, head of the Washington-based Wilson Center's Latin America program and director of its Argentina project. He cautioned against reading the results as a wholehearted endorsement of Milei's personality or agenda. Quote, on one side, you had the current finance minister who has presided over an utterly failing economy, end quote, Guedan explained. Quote, on the other, a very radical outside figure who offered something extraordinarily different, who wants to dollarize the economy, close a central bank, liberalize gun ownership and the sale of organs, a quirky individual who has calmed his dog and claims his pets are his senior advisors, end quote. Then we have Trump, Bolsonaro, and Wolverine. Milei's astonishing rise to power is a measure of the frustration of Argentinian voters, laying bare the depths of resentment at the ruling class and the country's state of affairs. It is also a product of television channels plugging provocative talking heads to boost their ratings, mirroring the rise of extremist pundits turned politicians everywhere. Argentina's next president made his name by furiously denouncing the, quote, political caste, end quote, on television programs, while also rambling on about inflation and his sex life. His anti-establishment rage resonated with Argentinians' yearning for change, while his disheveled mop of hair, inspired by X-Men, anti-hero Wolverine, and profanity-laden rhetoric, only contributed to his notoriety. 2 years ago, Milei's rising television stardom helped him secure a lawmaker seat in Argentina's lower house of Congress. He was seen as a very long shot for the presidency only months ago, until he scored the most votes in August primary elections, upending the political landscape. Before entering the public spotlight, Milei was chief economist at Corporación America, one of Argentina's largest business conglomerates that runs most of the country's airports. His flagship economic policies include, quote, dollarizing, end quote, the economy by 2025 to halt the, quote, cancer of inflation, end quote, meaning he would drop the peso, Argentina's currency, and thereby relinquish control over monetary policy. Milei has cast himself as a fierce adversary of the state, which he accuses of curtailing people's freedoms and emptying their pockets. At campaign rallies, he often appeared on stage, revving a chainsaw to symbolically cut the state down to size. He has vowed to slash public spending by 15%, privatize state companies, and reduce subsidies on fuel, transport, and electricity. The president-elect, who is due to take office on December 10, started to outline some of the planned policies in a radio interview on Monday morning, saying he would quickly move forward with plans to privatize state-run media outlets that gave him negative coverage during the campaign, describing them as a covert ministry of propaganda, end quote. Everything that can be in the hands of the private sector will be in the hands of the private sector, he told Buenos Aires radio station Radio Mitre, adding that the state-controlled energy from YPF would be revamped so it can be, quote, sold in a very, very, very beneficial way to Argentines, end quote. An admirer of former U.S. President Donald Trump, Milei has likewise embraced a maverick status, commanding unrivaled attention throughout the campaign with his provocative statements. He has not shied away from lashing at revered compatriots, including Pope Francis, whom he branded an imbecile, quote-unquote, for defending social justice. It is no surprise that he has adapted Trump's best-known slogan, promising to make Argentina great again, end quote. Like Trump and his Brazilian ally, Jair Bolsonaro, Milei has appealed to the conservative vote by promising a crusade against progressive politics. He has described sex education as a Marxist plot to destroy the traditional family unit and has promised a plebiscite to repeal abortion, which Argentina legalized in 2020. He also rejects the notion humans have a role in causing climate change. All of this is, quote, very worrying not only for women, but for minorities in general, because Milei is waging the same cultural wars that the far right is waging elsewhere, end quote, said Juan Pablo Ferrero, a senior lecturer in Latin American politics at the University of Bath. Quote, he is also rolling back on the human rights agenda that has gained Argentina international recognition, end quote, since the transition to democracy. Ferrero added that, quote, minorities will have to resist his moves in parliament and on the streets, end quote. Taking another page from the Trump and Bolsonaro playbooks, Milei has also made unfounded claims on election fraud before Sunday's runoff, raising concerns about his respect for democratic norms. Villarruel, his controversial running mate, who has minimized the number of victims of Argentina's brutal 1976 to 1983 dictatorship. But we also have a stress test for Argentinian democracy. In the run-up to the vote, Massa and his allies had warned Argentinians that Milei's would sharply curtail hard-won rights and the public services and welfare programs many rely on. Their margin of defeat suggests the strategy, which Milei had dismissed as a campaign of fear, may ultimately have backfired. Despite Milei, despite all his campaign mistakes, despite all his peculiarities that raised doubts and concerns, despite all of that, the demand for change prevailed, end quote. Lucas Romero, the head of Sinopsis, a local political consulting firm, told the Associated Press. Having cast himself as the only solution, quote, unquote, to Argentina's woes, Milei will have little time to bask in his country and his victory. Even before his election, panelists and analysts had already shed doubt on the feasibility of many of his campaign pledges, starting with his much-touted dolarization. Ditching the peso in favor of the dollar requires a hefty stock of greenbacks, and the International Monetary Fund has warned that Argentina's dollar reserves are dangerously low. Analysts have flagged the risk of a run on the peso as people panic, believing dollarization is imminent. Quote, Milei is someone who promises big new ideas, but maybe too big and maybe not feasible, said Guedin, noting that the president-elect has no parliamentary majority to back him and even less of a foothold in local government. Quote, it's far from clear he can implement his agenda, given his fledgling party, his few allies in Congress, the small and inexperienced group that surrounds him, and the fact that he controls none of the country's provinces, he added. Well, Milei's Liberty Advances party counts just 7 seats out of 72 in the Senate and 38 out of the 257 in the lower chamber of deputies. He will be hoping to win support from the mainstream right of former President Mauricio Macri, which threw its electoral weight behind him ahead of Sunday's runoff in a bid to ensure defeat for the incumbent Peronist camp. It remains to be seen whether his electoral support will translate into a political agreement, said Franz Zancat, Argentina expert David Golmezano. Quote, will some of Macri's circle join the government? Will conservative lawmakers offer their support? It's too early to know. Well, the lure of power and a common detestation of Peronism could be enough of an incentive. One can imagine the conservative camp going a long way back to back Milei, including some of his excesses, in order to get their revenge over the Peronist camp. Golmezano added, though noting that Milei would still be short of a majority in Congress, even with conservative support. According to Ferreira, Milei's election signaled the biggest stress test, quote unquote, for Argentina's democracy since the end of the military rule. Under the country's constitution, presidents have the power to rule by decree in exceptional circumstances, but that tests the system, he explained. We will see to what extent he makes use of these powers. There will be plenty of scrutiny of Milei's first steps on the international stage, too. The Argentinian provocateur has already raised alarm bells in a number of Latin American countries and said he would seek to reduce trade with China, Argentina's second biggest trading partner, after Brazil. While Trump and Bolsonaro were quick to hail the election results on Sunday, neither is currently in power. Center-left members, membership of leaders of Argentina's two largest neighbors, Brazil and Chile, have been noticeably more guarded in their response. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva on Sunday extended his best wishes to the newly elected president, but did not make direct mention of Milei. Previously expressed his hope that Argentinian voters would choose a president who supports democracy and the Mercosur trading bloc, which Milei has suggested Argentina should leave. Milei has criticized Brazil's president multiple times and labels him an angry communist, quote-unquote, and a totalitarian, quote-unquote, bent. On Monday, a close Lula aide said that Argentina's president-elect must apologize to the Brazilian leader before talks between the two can be organized. Quote, he freely offended President Lula, end quote, Social Communication Minister Paulo Pimenta told reporters, quote, it's up to Milei, as president-elect, to call and apologize, end quote. Whether at home or on the international stage, Argentina will be sailing through uncharted and choppy waters with El Loco at the helm. So we'll just see what's going to happen there. Unbelievable. Bear with me a moment here. One second. One moment. Back here. Bear with me a second. Okay, bear with me a moment here. All right, let's look up to see what else is happening around the world. There's a lot is happening. bear with me a moment here. Okay, here we are. Cargo ship has been hit by, or rather it hits a naval mine in the Black Sea en route to Ukraine. It seems that Ukrainian authorities said Thursday that a commercial ship arriving to collect grain hit a Russian naval mine in the Black Sea, injuring two sailors. The unnamed Panama flag ship was heading towards Ukraine's Danube port when it hit a mine, causing it to lose speed and control and sparking a fire on the upper deck, Ukraine's border guards had said. Ukraine has created a maritime corridor for commercial ships, which first passed close to the shores of Bulgaria and Romania. The border force did not specify exactly when or where the incident happened. The Maritime Bulletin, a website that tracks the shipping sector, wrote that a Greek-owned Panama flag ship called Vissos had a mine explode under its stern on Wednesday morning while on its way to the port of Ismail. Previously, two civilian cargo ships had been damaged by Russian mines. The Odessa Maritime Guard told Agence France-Presse this month. In the incident reported on Thursday, the captain intentionally ran the ship aground to stop it sinking, and Ukraine has sent tugs that it will take it to port. Well, the Maritime Guard brought doctors who treated one of the injured sailors on the spot while the other was hospitalized and is in good condition. Ukraine has pushed back Russian warships in the western part of the Black Sea to allow some cargo ships in and out along a maritime corridor. But the water remains heavily mined, including by Russian planes, and is particularly dangerous in stormy weather. One second. And then you may have heard this, I'm not sure. A Ukrainian airstrike has damaged a Russian naval ship in Crimea. The Kremlin on Tuesday acknowledged a Ukrainian attack that had damaged a warship in the occupied Crimean port of Feodosia in what Ukraine and its Western allies called a major setback for the Russian Navy. Ukraine said its Air Force destroyed the Novocherkassk, a landing ship, with President Volodymyr Zelensky joking on social media that the vessel had now joined the, quote, Russian underwater Black Sea Fleet, end quote. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu informed, quote, about the damage to our large landing ship, end quote, to President Vladimir Putin in a, quote, very detailed report, end quote, the president's spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters. While Ukraine's military said earlier that its air force had destroyed the Russian naval ship in a naval attack on the eastern Crimean port. The Ukrainian Defense Ministry wrote on X that the Novocherkassk landing ship was destroyed in Feodosia tonight. It published an unattributed photo showing flames and smoke in a port at night. Ukraine's aviation did an excellent job. Crimea in Ukraine. There is no place for the occupiers' fleet here, the ministry had written. In his post on social media, Zelensky wrote, quote, the occupiers will not have a single peaceful place in Ukraine, end quote. The attack comes after Ukraine struck the Black Sea Fleet headquarters in Sevastopol in September, forcing Russia to move warships to ports further east. Well, British Defense Minister Grant Shapps wrote on Twitter that this latest destruction of Putin's Navy demonstrates that those who believe there is a stalemate in the Ukraine war are wrong, end quote. Quote, Russia's dominance in the Black Sea is now challenged, end quote, he added. Well, the ship transported Shaheds. Ukrainian's Air Force said that its tactical aviation attacked the Novocherkassk with cruise missiles at around 00:30, so that's 30-minute Greenwich Mean Time in the area of the Feodosia. The videos posted on social media showed a fire on the horizon in a port area, followed by a loud explosion and a much larger blast of flames and smoke. Ukraine's armed forces said that on board of the ship were Shahed drones that Russia uses for attacks on Ukrainian cities. Ukraine frequently carries out strikes in Crimea, particularly targeting the Russian military. In April of 2022, it sank the cruiser Moskva, the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet. The Novocherkassk was previously used by Russia for its military intervention in Syria. The governor of the Russian annexed peninsula, Sergei Aksyonov, wrote on Telegram, quote, sadly, one person was killed and one other was wounded. And an atmosphere, okay, I'm just going to need to move on because I lost my place. I can't seem to find it. Bear with me a second. Okay. Let me just see if we can get here. This is going to be very interesting. Bill Maher has delivered a stunning 8-minute new rule on Israel. Okay. Let's just see if this loads up. I'm not quite sure. Okay, here it is. Right, pundit and comic Bill Maher delivered a stunning rebuke of the media, rhetoric on campuses, the leadership in the West Bank and Gaza on Friday, calling it a needed, quote,
I mean, where do you think Israel is going? Spoiler alert, nowhere. It's one of the most powerful countries in the world, with a $500 billion economy, the world's second largest tech sector, after Silicon Valley, as nuclear weapons. They're here. They like their bagel with a schmear. Get used to it. Happening to Palestinians today is horrible, and not just in Gaza, in the West Bank, too. But wars end with negotiation, and what the media glosses over is, it's hard to negotiate when the other side's bargaining position is, you all die and disappear. I mean, you chant from the river to the sea. Now let's look at the map. Here's the river, here's the six. Oh, I see, it means you get all of it. Not just the West Bank, which was basically the original UN partition being rejected because you wanted all of it and always had, even though it's indisputably also the Jews' ancestral homeland. And so you attacked and lost and attacked again and lost and attacked again and lost. As my friend Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? Look at what Mexico used to own, all the way up to the top of California. But no Mexican is out there chanting from the Rio Grande to Portland, Oregon. Because they chose a different path. They got real and built a country that's the world's 14th biggest economy now. Because they knew the United States wasn't going to give back Phoenix any more than Hamas will ever be in Tel Aviv. One of the leaders of Hamas says, save yourselves time and imaginary dreams. In a few years, Allah willing, you will have to discuss the situation in the region after Israel. I'm sorry, who's the one with imaginary dreams? If I give you the benefit of the doubt and say your plan for a complete Jewish Palestine isn't that all the Jews should die, what is the only other option? A move. You move all the Jews. Okay, I gotta warn you, there's gonna be some tension. We move all the Jews, and we do this with what? A fleet of trucks called Jew Ball? And so where are we moving this entire country? Texas. Sure, they have room, and I guess we could put the rally wall on the border and build 2 bridges with one side. Or we could just get to it.
Boy, that was phenomenal. I had not heard that before. Unbelievable. Very, very well done. Totally unexpected. Unbelievable. Okay. Bear with me a moment as I look up some other things for you. Bear with me a second here. One second. Okay. 1 second. Well, after the war, a unity government will rule Gaza, so says Hamas. All major Palestinian Arab groups in Gaza are considering a joint unity government to rebuild Gaza following the war. Zahir Jabarin, a member of the political arm of Hamas and the one responsible for Hamas's prisoners, commented that Hamas leadership is currently deliberating on a, quote, national unity government, end quote. So, so reports that during the deliberation between representatives of Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the PLO, and the Democratic Front, the possibility of a Palestinian Arab establishment based on mutual consensus is being discussed. Such an initiative would take place only after a ceasefire. According to Jabarin, the establishment would be based on all Palestinian Arab quote-unquote organizations, with no exception, and the new government would be responsible for rehabilitating Gaza and rebuilding the, quote, Palestinian Authority, end quote, the legislative authority, and the presidency. Jabarin commented that Hamas has not responded to offers made by mediators and instead demanded a ceasefire before any negotiations, in accordance with the interests of the Palestinian people. Regarding the question of whether Hamas will agree to a ceasefire after which a government without Hamas would be established to rule the Gaza Strip, Jabarin commented, quote, the Palestinian people will decide for itself who will rule it, end quote. And prior to this, Hamas had announced that it would accept a solution based on a unity government and the establishment of regime of a regime based on democratic values and elections. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Eventually we'll find out. 1 second. A Jewish Iranian minister of parliament threatens revenge. Seems that the Minister of Parliament, Homayoun Sameh, said that the assassination of Razi Mousavi will not remain unanswered, and Israel will pay a heavy price for this action. So, see what they're talking about. Seeing the Jewish-Iranian Minister of Parliament and representative of the Jewish community, Homayoun Sameh, attacked Israel for the assassination of Sayed Razi Mousavi, a commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps in Syria. The assassination of the martyr, Razi Mousavi, shows the Zionist regime's despair on the battlefield against the resistance, Sameh said in an interview with the regime's IRNA news agency. According to him, the Zionist regime, quote-unquote, must know that it cannot disrupt the military might of the Islamic Republic of Iran by assassinating Iranian military commanders, end quote. Homayoun Sameh, who is known for his vocal opposition to Israel, quote, clarified, quote, we will switch Mousavi with someone who is elite and skilled. From this point of view, these assassinations won't cause a problem for Iran in the slightest. The Jewish-Iranian representative to the Islamic Council added that the Mousavi, the martyr, was an outstanding commander and effective on the battlefields against terror movements in the region and their supporters, and his death shows that his effect on the battlefield the Zionist regime made into a saint in a terror attack, end quote. Well, he noted that the Jewish community in Iran condemns the murder of the martyr Mozavi by the Zionist regime, and expresses his condolences to the supreme ruler of the United States. One second. One second here. Okay. This is an article written by Amil Imani. The title of the article is Islamic Subversion in America. It's not yet insurrection as in France. It is stealth jihad. It is a red light for America. This is an op-ed, again, by Amil Imani. Abraham Lincoln said that America will never be defeated from outside. If we falter and lose our freedom, it will come from the inside, end quote. Well, the introduction. Never in my wildest dreams did I envision that my once very modern and beautiful country, Iran, would fall into the hands of Muslim extremists who did not possess one iota of humanity. Never in my wildest dream did I envision that I would likely never see the country of my birth again. My teenage years in Iran were full of joy, excitement, and happiness. Iran was a developing country. I've got some medication today and it's causing me problems in visualizing. Okay, despite its rapid growth and obstacles, almost all Iranians live in a fairy tale. Life was beautiful and dreams were real. Many of us were living in an absolute Iranian dream until the resurrection of the evil ideology of Islam by the vile men of Allah. In 1979, the Iranian dream turned into 4 decades of Islamic nightmares. From that young age, I hated the Islam I knew and everything that came with it. I never saw it as a divine religion or a spiritual path. I had enough sense in me to do my research. I found more than I was looking for. I first learned that Islam was an invader and that the enemy of humanity. Violence and blood were at the core of this ideology of hate. When the revolution began, I was one of the lucky ones who was accepted to higher education to the United States to continue my education, far away from Islam. Little I knew that Islam would follow me there, or rather here. Well, the American dream has always been a staple of American culture simply because everyone could have the American dream with a little hard work. Nowadays, when people speak of it, they often refer to the first half of the 20th century. Despite this, the ideal of the American dream is just as relevant to American culture today as it was in the late century. Politicians are notorious for overusing this phrase during their campaigns. Realistically, both countries' dreams are just a distant memory. Once I left Iran, my battle with this dogma of hate and violence began. I decided to raise the clarion call about the imminent. And present danger of expansionist theocratic Islam throughout the civilized world. Having witnessed firsthand the horrors and indignity the Islamic doctrine visits on people it subjugates, I was determined to take it upon myself to do my part to defeating this ideology of oppression and violence. Okay. I guess that's about it. Because the medication I'm taking, I'm just literally falling asleep. Even though I've had a full night's sleep and everything's cool. So it is. All right, folks. So tomorrow is the weekend. Wish you all a very, very pleasant weekend. And I don't know what the weather's like, but hopefully it'll be good. And then we'll be back again together on Monday. Thank you all very, very much. Be well and goodbye.